Well, hello and welcome back to the Weekly Pulse podcast. I'm Jeff Snyder, founder of the Morning Pulse and your host for the next 40 minutes as we wrap up the week that was in retirement, markets, technology, and personal finance. We've got another great show planned for you this week. We're going to be joined by Jason Keidel of WFAN New York and CBS Sports as we preview the NFL season. We'll be joined in that segment by Noah Zuss of Pageant Media's Fund Intelligence to analyze the latest trends in the NFL. And then, of course, we're going to tap into our legal eagles, who last week had some rapid reaction to the Trump announcement on retirement security. We'll get some additional information from them. And, of course, we've got our contributors. So sit back, relax, put on your seatbelt for this episode of The Weekly Pulse. We're going to start things off, of course, with our top social media trends of the week. And joining us from LinkedIn in San Francisco, California, Mr. Devin Banerjee. Devin, welcome back to the show.
Thanks, Jeff. How are you?
I'm doing okay. It's been a good week, good few days, and ready to get back at it. So I know LinkedIn has been actively tracking conversations on its social network. What are some of the top of mind issues for LinkedIn and viewers this week?
Absolutely, Jeff. A lot of conversations happening on this week after Labor Day. The first, of course, your viewers may have noticed this strong discussion around Nike and its advertising campaign around the anniversary of the Just Do It slogan. And it decided to involve Colin Kaepernick, who is, most of your viewers know, kind of a controversial figure in American football. Nike shares were down Tuesday, almost 4%. I think they came back up a bit, but still down on the day. And a lot of mixed reaction. Obviously, people think a large company like Nike shouldn't be taking such a strong stance on controversial issues or controversial players. Others on the other side saying, look, Nike has in its entire history featured iconoclasts and people who have broken the mold and people who have shattered records and done new things for the first time. So really interesting conversation going on there. I will point out that a few analysts have weighed in. Brian Nagel from Oppenheimer says he thinks Nike will benefit from this ad deal with Colin Kaepernick in the long term, even though he says there may be some short-term pressure. Jim Cramer from CNBC says, look, he sees this as a long-term positive, and he does see Nike as overvalued on the fundamentals, but he thinks if the stock were to fall further on such quote-unquote controversial deals, that the stock would be a buy.
Excellent. And you know, top of mind, obviously, it's the NFL football season, the day the show runs. So it'll be the first full day of football games. So obviously a strategic move perhaps by Nike to discuss this issue. But we'll have to see how it kind of plays out. Maybe we can have an update later next week what people are saying. And I think you
were good idea.
The other another top story was about something around the definition of accredited investor. What are people saying there?
Really interesting story in the Wall Street Journal last week. An interview with the SEC chairman Jay Clayton, and it turns out that the chairman does want to consider changing the definition of accredited investor. Now, why does he want to do this? Well, for one large reason, in this interview, he says he wants more a wider array of investors to be able to access the private markets to invest. So obviously right now, only accredited investors and qualified purchasers, et cetera, people with certain income and wealth thresholds are able to invest in private companies and private funds. And Chairman Clayton saying that he would like to expand access. And so I think this is really interesting. I personally covered private market investing for 7 years at Bloomberg. Obviously, the private fund managers and private companies would love to, you know, tap a wider pool of potential clients and investors. But you need to weigh that against the interests of private investors, whether Some of them are sophisticated enough to take part in the private markets. And kind of buried at the bottom of the interview with the Wall Street Journal, the chairman floats a few interesting things he's thinking about when you think about changing the definition of accredited investors. And he says he might look at some metrics like professional licenses or advanced education to add to those existing metrics of income thresholds and wealth thresholds. So I'm very, very curious where this goes. The SEC is working on a white paper right now about it, and then it will open the issue up to public comment. So I would consider firms and other professionals to weigh in with their views, because this is a really important issue, I think.
Absolutely. And I'll say this, from the two issues that are come to mind when you mention the SEC and this issue. Number one, we just had a huge year debate on the DOL fiduciary rules ending in there, I guess, setting those rules being set aside. But the SEC has taken up similar rules that they're weighing and whether or not they're going to implement. Additionally, talking about the definition of accredited investor in the retirement industry, one of the things that not many, but is being discussed is the inclusion of alternative investments, you know, those that are not, you know, traditional investments being offered in retirement plans, and where they might be able to be included is perhaps in target date funds. So this is an ever growing discussion. And it's interesting that the SEC chairman kind of weighs in here.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, this discussion has been going on for years. So it's interesting to see that finally sort of the SEC chairman weigh in on the record saying that the regulatory agency is considering changes to this.
Absolutely. And it looks like what I love about the social network is that you cover a wide range of issues. So we go from the Nike ad campaign to the SEC chairperson weighing in to colleges doing price match guarantees.
Yeah. One of our most active conversations early this week is colleges competing for students. And in doing so, they're offering tuition match guarantees. And so we're seeing private colleges, private universities, which are typically more expensive than the state colleges and universities, saying to high performing high school students, look, we will match the public college tuition for you. We're also seeing some schools offer out of state students who are high performers the same in-state rate, the lower rate that they offer in-state students. And so, I mean, look, this is at the intersection of several trends that you talk about a lot. The most important one being obviously college affordability, and I think we're going to see more kind of unique moves and offers like this from schools, and because something has to change, something in the system has to change. I think college affordability is just too large an issue for many families, at least in the U.S. right now.
Absolutely. We talked last week about student loan debt and the ability of the IRS facilitating the ability to provide some type of safe harbor for employers paying that off. So more to come. Great coverage, as usual, from the folks at LinkedIn. Devin, have a great weekend, and we'll talk to you next week.
Thanks, Jeff. Take care.
Bye. Welcome back, and we've got another great technology segment. We're going to welcome back to the program, Natalie Walter. She's a tech reporter for The Motley Fool. And actually, Natalie, welcome back. And you were actually on a production set last week. That's why you weren't on the show.
That's right. I've been doing a little bit of production work here and there. I'm not a movie star yet. I'm just a background actress. But maybe one day. You know, you got to start somewhere.
Absolutely.
I'm not supposed to say what shows they're on, but I did three different shows last week, and it's just been a cool, fun experience. I've just always been curious about the film industry and how film sets work, and I know I'd like to write a screenplay one day. So this is just kind of getting some background information on how those things work.
Awesome. Well, welcome back, and glad to have you. And maybe you'll be writing a screenplay on retirement and technology, or maybe not, depending how everything goes. But so, what say you in terms of technology? We didn't talk to you last week, but I believe that Apple sent out its invites for its annual meeting.
Right. So the annual meeting will be on September 12th, and this is the annual fall event for Apple, where they announce their new iPhones and a few other updates. And this year is planning to to release three new models that look like the iPhone X. There's going to be a refresher of last year's iPhone X, and then a larger premium version of the iPhone X, and then a larger, cheaper version of the iPhone X that's going to come in a few different colors for people to choose from. So this kind of, so there's been a few different reports in the past year with, you know, some analysts saying, oh, the iPhone X isn't selling well, it's too expensive, you know, it's $1,000, people aren't going to pay that. But then Apple has continually come back and said, actually, it's our best seller and it's selling really well and we're really pleased with it. So I guess the fact that they're, you know, they're releasing three new models like it proves that it's actually selling very well despite the price tag and that they're happy with it and they're moving forward with it.
Absolutely. It sounds like that. And I was actually reading online, there are some other product launches that I think we're expecting too. There's potentially new iWatch or Apple Watch. I think that's what they call it. A new iPad Pro that, you know, that's going to be out on the market and some other things, right?
Right, right. So they kind of give a refresher on their all their main products in the fall, and it's just in time for the holidays.
Wow, wonderful. So what else is going on in technology? What did we miss last week?
Another exciting thing that happened is Amazon is the second American company to cross the $1 trillion in value mark.
Wow.
If you'll remember, I think we talked last month in August when Apple hit that mark, and I think it was early August. And so now Amazon has quickly followed up. And I read in the New York Times that Bezos, Jeff Bezos, is now worth almost as much as Bill Gates and Warren Buffett put together.
Wow.
Pretty astonishing. And so, you know, when you think about Amazon, you know, it's pretty common knowledge that for a while, you know, it's a 24-year-old company, and for a while it wasn't showing a profit. Then it told investors, trust us, you know, we're going to keep reinvesting money and it's going to pay off in the long run. And in the past few years, investors have seen that paid off. And so its stock, you know, has gone up even more as people are just more confident in the company.
Yeah, so second American company at $1 trillion. You know, I read over the weekend that Amazon, like Netflix, is going to spend billions of dollars for new content. I think we talked about this over the past couple of months about Amazon's or Netflix spending a lot of money on new original content. Looks like Amazon's going to spend like $5 billion to build that out. So, you know, I think we talked maybe a week or so ago about this platform and how they, you know, what platform wins out. Is it just the content platform or is it a multi-dimensional platform where there's retail sales and other things? And it's just interesting to see these all these different models kind of take shape and grow and evolve.
Right. Amazon is just such a multi-dimensional company. You know, it has the clouds business that's doing really well, and it's obviously it has the e-commerce platform, and now it's really building up its entertainment library, you know, with music and, like you said, with TV shows and movies. And they have they're apparently the owners now of the most expensive TV show ever, which is their Lord of the Rings remake that is being made right now. So Amazon, you know, it has money to spend, has deep pockets, and I think that's going to show in its content. And it's going to be hard for other up-and-coming players to compete with that. And so, yeah, I think that's true. And I think, you know, it'll be interesting to see what people do with Disney coming out with a streaming platform next year. Then it'll be Disney, Apple, Netflix, Amazon, Hulu, CBS. You know, there's just so many platforms. I mean, nobody's going to want to pay for all of those. So maybe people are going to pick and choose two or three, or maybe they'll subscribe to one for a few months and then subscribe to another one for another few months. It'll just be interesting to see which strategy people take.
Absolutely. And you get to that point where there's overload and too much content. But I guess that's right. We'll discuss that another day. Natalie Walters, always a pleasure talking to you, and good luck in that aspiring movie career as well.
Thank you. Always great to talk to you guys.
Take care.
Bye. Bye-bye.
Welcome back, and now it's time for our market segment, and we're going to welcome back to the show George Grombacher, an advisor out of Arizona, along with Kevin Kelly from Bloomberg, and off back from vacation, it's Mr. Oliver Rennick from TD Ameritrade Network. Guys, how are you today?
Doing great.
Well,
wow.
It's a chorus too. You guys are really, it's amazing. It's amazing. So George, you are the Sun Tzu of retirement, very philosophical man. Always come up with some good ideas and good thoughts. You have your own podcast. What say you this week in terms of what you're covering, what you're hearing, what you're seeing from clients?
Well, it's crazy that it's September and pumpkin spice and football dominate the national appetite. But I guess what's most important about that is before you know it, in the blink of an eye, it's going to be the end of the year. But there's still time to get stuff done financially that you were thinking about doing. So what's top of mind for me this week, I've got a series of workshops planned where I'm going to be talking to entrepreneurs about their financial situations. And what I'm really going to stress is that you take it like you mean it. So when you are sitting down thinking about your personal finances, be fully engaged if it's 5 minutes or if it's an hour long. And I think that that'll really serve you well. Undoubtedly, people are going to have a bunch of questions about, I think, domestic companies with the news about Colin Kaepernick and Nike and Amazon hitting $1 trillion. So I think it's an exciting time for U.S. companies. What say you, Kevin?
Yeah, no, I mean, that's a perfect segue, because something we've been looking at is just kind of this roaring back of the growth over value trade. And you saw a little bit of value, you know, try and make a comeback. And we talked about this a couple weeks ago. But I mean, you look at these companies like an Amazon, like you mentioned, George, but across the infotech and consumer discretionary space, and growth just has a handle on this market. But it's actually pretty interesting when you look at, you know, consumer discretionary stocks as a sector overall in the U.S. market are some of the best performers so far this year. But when you actually strip out the high flying names like Amazon and Netflix, they're relatively flat on the year. I mean, you have an interesting dynamic going on in that sector where, you know, there has been a bit of a retail kind of brick and mortar comeback. But at the same time, you also have trade weighing on some of the household durable names. So, you know, it's really kind of, people continue to make the argument that, you know, Amazon hits $1 trillion. That's obviously a huge accomplishment, huge mark. But there's this idea that valuation, you know, it's, as we've talked about, is a very poor timing mechanism. And so, you know, to call the end of that trade is a little bit difficult because people have been saying that for the last 5 years have essentially been burned. So what I'd like to do, and this is how we'll kind of segue and kick it over to Oliver, because I'm sure this is something he's watching, is, you know, where that growth expansion kind of ends. And I know he's been looking at things like marijuana stocks recently. That was something I was actually looking at this morning, because those oftentimes blow my mind, the price action going on there. So maybe I'll kick it over to Oliver and kind of get his take on that space and the secular growth trade.
Oh, don't throw me in that camp too quick. No, I'm just kidding. Yeah, it's been super interesting to watch. You know, it's impossible to really speak to the sort of credibility of some of these companies, or the more importantly, the price action behind what's been happening there. But obviously, like any, you know, potential growth area, there's a ton of excitement and, you know, speculation about what the industry could become. Some of these companies obviously are a little bit more are further along, you know, the progress spectrum in terms of actually generating some degree of cash flow from this industry, mostly these Canadian companies, and some of those that have had big investments from, you know, businesses like Constellation Brands, the beer distributor that invested in CGC, Canopy Grow. So, you know, some of that I think is very real and starting to show some, you know, actual business growth. But there's still just so much, you know, speculation that's happening on a day. Anytime you've got companies moving 10-20% today, I'm just looking at another one up 16%, up 13%. You know, short seller comes down and says he doesn't like the stock anymore after he liked it earlier, and then it drops back down. So it's certainly a really fun thing to watch right now in terms of some of the trading action. You know, the other thing is just putting in perspective, at the beginning of the year there was a lot of this type of behavior happening also in pot stocks, but in a lot of the blockchain type companies. A lot of those obviously exploded and went back, you know, down to wherever they were before, but it's kind of the same idea. Some of those might eventually come back if they do something with this technology. But overall, clearly there is an appetite for investing in the environment right now. It probably says something about the health of our consumer and where we are economically. That's kind of my big takeaway from, is that there are the ability for this type of hysteria to get whipped up is definitely there right now.
So let me get some rapid reaction from you guys. I kind of steamrolled Kevin and George last week because the president had yet to weigh in. But we had some news, and now that we've had a kind of a week to kind of digest that information, but retirement security was top of mind last Friday, and the president issued an executive order. We had a conversation from Secretaries Acosta and Secretary McMahon. From George, from your perspective, now that you've had a week to kind of digest that, listen to the podcast, the Eagles have weighed in here. Thoughts on that?
Yeah, I think it's a really, really exciting time for the smaller employer groups who have been maybe waiting on an easier way to get into the retirement marketplace, or just being able to offer an option or a plan to their employees. So I think it's a really exciting time, and I'm excited about the options, and I think the opportunities that we will see in the near future for cost-effective and easy ways for them to offer plans to their employees.
And Kevin, how do you see it? I mean, it's not really a job of an analyst really to weigh in on retirement legislation, but you know, just your thoughts in general, what you heard from the president.
I mean, I think it's really encouraging, but kind of echoing to majority's points, anything that gets, especially from a small business perspective, which at oftentimes can probably seem pretty overwhelming to even offer these types of plans. And then on the flip side, if you're an employee, it's very easy to see how even some of the investing strategies may be simple once you're in a retirement plan, but getting access to them is something you always want to have everyone on a more level playing field, so to speak. So yeah, I mean, definitely shows some good signs. There's a long way to go, as we know. That's kind of what we're trying to bring transparency to, is that there's a long way to go in this retirement space. But I'm really curious to see how this ends up and what the new technologies that end up rolling out to help support, you know, onboarding hopefully more small businesses.
Oh, thanks. You know what? I want to end on, we got 1 minute left, and it's NFL season now. And earlier in the show, we had Jason Keidel from WFAN and CBS Sports kind of weighing in on the issues on the National Football League. We're not going to get into all the politics and all that kind of stuff, but how are you guys seeing we've talked about football on and off the last few months and sports. How are you guys seeing the football season this year?
Stocks, baby. It's all about the stocks involved.
Nice.
I don't know if that was a football question, but I got nothing to add on football.
Every year is our year.
Every year. And who is your team? Buffalo Bills?
Bills Mafia. Every year is our year.
Okay. Well, this is not going to be the Bills year, man. I hate to break it to you. Skol, Minnesota Vikings, Super Bowl champs.
All right. Well, they lost out last year. Okay. Well, on that note, guys, thank you so much for weighing in, and we'll check back with you next week.
Thanks, gentlemen.
Have a great week.
See you later. Thanks, John.
Bye.
Thanks, George.
Well, welcome back, everyone. We've got another great segment. You know, it's NFL season, and this coming Sunday, and we're really pleased to have join us Jason Keidel. He's a sports writer with CBS and CBS Local Sports here in New York. Jason, welcome to the show.
Thanks for having me.
Thank you. And we're also going to bring in a returning guest, Noah Zuss. He is a reporter, journalist for Fund Intelligence. Noah, great to have you back.
Hey, Jeff. It's my pleasure. Thanks for having me back.
Awesome. Well, great to have you as well. So, Jason, let's start to you. You cover sports for CBS Sports and the WFAN radio network. Let's talk about the NFL season. What's top of mind for you as we get ready to start this season?
There are two overriding themes that seem to be dominating the headlines. One would be the length of training camp and the number of preseason games. A lot of times NFL will keep their star players off the gridiron during preseason games out of fear of injury. So one of the proposals owners are making is to shorten the preseason to, let's say, two games and then add two games to the regular season or some mutation of that. Basically, you know, you have OTAs, which is organized team activities, and then you have training camp, and then you have these four preseason games. So a lot of players find it redundant and very risky in terms of injury. The other topic seems to be money. There have been some major signings to major players recently. Most notably, the Giants just signed Odell Beckham to a $95 million deal with $60 million guaranteed. And so what's happening is other players, basically a player signs a large contract, and then that either irks or motivates other players to go to their general managers and ask for more money. So Odell Beckham had always said he wants to be the highest paid player in the NFL, which was never going to happen because he's not a quarterback. But he did wind up becoming the highest paid receiver in the NFL, which is maybe a risky move because there's been some questionable behavior in his past, which is well documented. And he's also been injured. He broke his ankle last year, missed the bulk of the season. So the Giants are hoping, A, he matures, and B, he stays healthy. Another contract that was just signed is the largest in NFL history, and that's Aaron Rodgers. He just signed a four-year, $134 million deal with $100 million guaranteed. Now, that would only happen for a quarterback because that is the most important position in all of team sports. So the it's not a joke, but one of the things that is that's embittered many NFL players is you have two NFL contracts in history. One, Matt Ryan, quarterback of the Falcons, and two, Aaron Rodgers of the Packers, have $100 million guaranteed. Okay, that's two players in NFL history. In the NBA, there have been 61 such contracts. So the chasm between the NBA and the NFL has really bothered the NFL, and they feel like they've been misrepresented during union negotiations by their union boss, D'Amore Smith. You know, when you consider the violence and the injury and the post-career problems like CTE that they encounter, they feel they deserve more money. And in particular, they feel they deserve more guaranteed money. You know, it's one of the running jokes of pro football is somebody could sign an $80 million contract, but if $8 million is guaranteed, the contract is only really worth $8 million. They can cut that player and not pay the remaining $72 million. So those are the two overriding topics right now, other than, you know, who we think is going to win the Super Bowl or that kind of thing.
Right. Well, thanks for that, Jason. And I was, you know, and that's a perfect segue. You know, I was doing a little bit of research. The average NFL career is about 3.2 years. So if you do the math, the basic salary, four-year minimum for players in this year's draft is about $465,000, and it goes up, it steps up through year four. So players only have a certain period of time in which to earn income. And I was also looking online at the NFL website, NFL Players Engagement. They spend a tremendous amount of time on educating their players, right? And I think you and I were talking offline about this. There was something actually featured on Hard Knocks recently, that HBO special about that.
Yes, absolutely. First of all, there are rookie seminars on all manner of things. First of all, how to conduct yourself now that you're no longer in college. You are a professional football player. This is your job. You know, in other words, this isn't one big frat party. You're not going to be treated like as royalty like you were at Ohio State or Florida or Michigan or wherever. This is your job, and you are a rookie. You are no longer the big man on campus, literally and figuratively. And two, there are a number of seminars in terms of how to handle your money, financial investments and such. And what was interesting is during this particular season of Hard Knocks, which is a 4 or 5 episode series every summer, the HBO broadcast, taking us inside an NFL training camp. This year it's the Cleveland Browns. Anyway, there was a defensive lineman for the Browns. I'm so sorry that I can't remember his name, but he was sort of the de facto financial advisor for the team. And he was taking rookies into classrooms and showing them on an actual blackboard, look, if you take $10,000, put it here, take $20,000, put it here, and leave it alone for 6, 7, 8 years, you will be a millionaire just by leaving that money alone. And what I found interesting was two things. One, his unselfish nature and zeal for finances, but also how bored these players were by the seminar. You know, he's trying to show them how to not go broke. You know, like about 80% of NBA players are broke 5 years after they retire. And everybody thinks that NFL players have these sprawling 15-year careers like Peyton Manning or Big Ben Roethlisberger or Tom Brady or John Elway. That's not how it goes. Like you said, the average career is 3.2 years. And half, this is a number a lot of people don't believe, but it's true, half of the NFL consists of undrafted free agents, players who were never even drafted out of college. So the idea that everybody's rich and famous in the NFL is not true. Most are toiling on practice squads, struggling to keep a spot on the roster. And, you know, if they make $1 million or $2, or $2 million, they're thrilled with it. Most people don't make this kind of cash.
Yeah. Well, thanks, Jason. No, I want to turn it to you. You cover the retirement industry. I want to get your reaction to what Jason and I were just discussing.
Look, for me and you and people on the street, obviously it's more important because of the threshold that we have. But the point Jason made is really important. Aaron Rodgers is Aaron Rodgers is Aaron Rodgers. There's only one guy named Aaron Rodgers who's getting $100 million guaranteed. And even in that case, even if you're making a good salary, you got to make sure it lasts. A lot of these guys, like Jason alluded to, were big men on campus. And if you know anything about college football, it's not the most maybe rigorous academic environment if you go to Miami or Florida State or a big football school. And if you're planning a career in football and that's your main source of income, you really need to make sure that those earnings last and then you're invested well. It is too bad that those players on Hard Knocks weren't so into it. But I think that's true of a lot of young people.
Yeah.
In their first jobs and talking about 401ks, it kind of glaze over. I mean, you only have to look as far as the some of the documentaries. And there was a series called there was an episode called Broke in one of the documentary series that documented all of the NFL players who were some were big stars who lived high in the hog and ended up, you know, not managing their money well and going broke, as the title suggested.
Yeah. Well, I think you both bring up some great points, and just like the regular population of people, it's important to plan ahead, to gain financial independence, understand your financial well-being and what that means for you and your family, and also take into account what your salary is going to be, and also think about what your career is going to be maybe after football, because football typically doesn't last beyond 3.5 years in the NFL. Guys, I want to thank you so much for joining us. We're going to look forward to the NFL season, check out those games, and hopefully we'll have you back on a little bit later on in the season. We'll catch up and maybe also talk about some of the other sports as they go live the rest of the year. So thanks for joining us. Have a great weekend, and we'll talk to you all very soon.
Thanks, Jeff.
And in our personal finance segment, we're pleased to welcome in Miss Allie Melito from MarketWatch. Allie, how are you?
I'm good. How are you?
I'm doing great. And we're also pleased to have my fiance Jody joining us. Jody, how are you?
I'm good. Excited to do this.
Well, great. Well, great for and we've got a really good segment planned. I know Allie just wrote a piece about wedding invitations, and I immediately thought of us and our wedding. So, Allie, why don't you start and discuss the article and kind of the things you found?
Sure. So I am very interested in wedding planning and just the cost of weddings, given that the average American wedding cost somewhere around $33,000 in 2017. So I started looking at different expenses, and one of the biggest expenses people face, one of the more important ones has to do with paper. Invitations, save the dates, thank you cards, all these different things. So I asked The Knot, which is a famous, well-known wedding site, to help me dig into the numbers, and they said that they found that the average cost of wedding invitations last year was $408. But for big budget weddings, which, you know, if you're in New York, they're always big budget, whether you like it or not, that usually is around $1,000 or more. And then I started looking at different options. So I looked at inexpensive options, which you could do online, or even like Evites, which is only online. You're not printing anything out or sending anything out. And then I looked at moderately priced ones, which are the ones that, you know, maybe they're a little more detailed. Maybe they open up on both sides or in like on four sides. And then I looked at the expensive ones, which are like those magnificent boxes where the invitation is printed and placed in a box, and then you send the entire box out, whether there's a gift in there or not, like a tote bag or not. It doesn't actually matter. It comes in a box. So it turns out invitations can be extremely expensive, even more than the $1,000 that was the average. Significantly more than the average.
Thank you, Allie. Now, Jody, I want to come to you, and you're being a real good sport about doing this. I know I had to basically I wouldn't say that we use the word threaten, but just coerce you into coming on the show. But I think people, I guess my reason is I think people can learn from our experience. And would you mind, you know, you heard what Allie had to say, and without going into pricing, just go through your experience in terms of selecting invitations. You have, you know, obviously have really, you know, good ideas and good taste, but what's been your experience in kind of this aspect of the wedding?
Well, I think what Ali touched on in terms of pricing is really the sky is the limit. And, you know, I always had an idea that I wanted letterpress invitations, but I had no idea what they cost. And it turns out they're very expensive. So, you know, I think Jeff and I reached a compromise where we say we went for letterpress, but beyond that, you can add so many other details. So we, you know, stopped at a certain point. We set a budget, but it's so easy to keep on adding on. There's so many pretty things, and it's kind of like you're trying to represent yourself as a couple on a piece of paper, and it's very exciting and fun. So it was a balance.
Yeah, absolutely.
Oh, yeah.
Go ahead.
Actually,
sorry, Ali.
Somebody that I spoke with, oh no, it's okay. Somebody that I spoke with said that the reason why you want to spend so much basically is because that's the introduction to the wedding for these guests. So they don't know anything about what you're planning, but when they see this invitation, you know, the way that you present it is the way that they'll go into the wedding with those expectations based on your invitation. I don't think that means that you should spend a lot of money just because, you know, as others I spoke to pointed out, invitations do get thrown out a lot of the time. Some might save them as mementos, but most people don't do that. So you are spending a lot of money that nobody's going to be able to keep. Like nobody's really, there are other ways that they can savor memories from the wedding, and invitations aren't always the that thing for them. Yeah.
Absolutely. And I would just add that sometimes the wedding invitations get returned even when properly addressed. So, you know, because for postage or maybe just they just didn't get delivered. So kind of always had to balance that. And we've always had to have that that balanced approach. Great story there, Allie. One last story. We've got about a minute left. You also wrote a story on instant gratification or behavior. What's going on there?
Yeah. So I'll tell you that one real quickly. So basically, there are a bunch of different factors that can determine how how wealthy you might be down the road. And the basic ones are like race, age, ethnicity, height, obviously education and occupation. But there's one that a lot of people don't consider, and that is just the ability to delay instant gratification, which is like, don't buy this now, buy this later, or see if you even want it later. So next time you are thinking about how you can boost your income, also think about your ability to be patient and hold off for really good things.
Absolutely. And that applies to so many different aspects of our life. Allie Melito from MarketWatch, Jody, my lovely fiance, thank you so much for joining us on this segment, and enjoy the rest of your week.
Thank you.
Bye.
Bye.
Well, welcome back. And last week we talked about the executive order. We're going to welcome back for our impact segment the Legal Eagles, David Levine and Kevin Walsh. Guys, how are you?
We're good. Thanks for having us on. It's always great to be on your show.
Well, great. Thanks, guys. So, David, you had some time to digest the president's executive order. What's top of mind this week?
Top of mind is how does the world tie all this together? The executive order is one piece. I think our theme this week is change is a coming. One way or another, retirement policy is moving forward. You've got the executive order. We already went over that briefly last week. But how does it tie into what else is out there already? Talking very briefly, we have the MEPS, the multiple employer plan guidance. The DOL can only do so much. They can't necessarily open the world to every type of open MEP for every unaffiliated employer. So that makes RESA, the bill that we've talked about many times, still a valuable thing to talk about because RESA is out there and RESA has MEP provisions in it, and we're likely to see that continue to move forward. Whether it moves forward this fall, we know that there's a lot of things like dealing with nominations and other things that are going on right now. So it'll move forward probably at some point, but this sort of creates a parallel track for moving forward on MEPs tied together. Then let's move to lifetime income. E-delivery a bit more. E-delivery is the same thing. E-delivery is, you have like the Retire Act. The idea is, if you have proposals that are out there right now that are designed to increase e-delivery from a legislative standpoint. Now you've got the administration. You're seeing those two dovetail together. And that's another thing that we're going to see going. So one way or another, e-delivery will keep getting pushed. And don't forget the SEC. There's been a lot of discussion at the SEC, a lot of back and forth about electronic delivery there. So you put all these things together, it shows e-delivery with a critical mass. Where it lands, we'll have to see, because there are stakeholders on all sides, but that's another thing. Lastly, minimum distributions. Minimum distributions are another key thing that really shows we're going to move forward. Every couple years, there's proposals to change those age 70 and a half minimum distribution rules in legislation. It's a revenue raiser, because the way Congress does budgeting, it will increase revenue for the government if they change those rules to stretch out distributions. And here, the president has told the IRS and Treasury to do the same. So as you can see, parallel tracks on a bunch of key initiatives that have been in legislation, but taking time or just popping up, now also paralleling on the retirement policy side from a regulatory side. Kevin, what do you think?
Yeah, David, I think you're making a key point. I think it builds on what we've been saying all year, that there's change on the horizon. The difference now is that it's no longer on the horizon and it's coming into sight. You have the president with the executive order. It seems like there's going to be a MEP proposal in the not too distant future coming out of the department. You've got potential for e-delivery rules coming out sometime in the next year or so. In addition, you've got RISA moving. You've got the SEC working on reg best interest. Kind of, it's like the scene in Les Mis where they're saying one day more. It's kind of crescendoing to a point where change is likely in the retirement system now.
Great point. And I would add, where does this mean for folks? First of all, one of the things in the executive order is talking about the new economy workers, gig workers, however you want to call them, trying to figure out how they fit into MEPs. I think that's something that's a line in there, but that ties to other legislation that members of Congress have been introducing to try and cover them by benefits, the so-called coverage gap. But where does this leave us in the end? To me, my last thought on this is change can be scary. For plan sponsors, there's going to be a lot of marketing out there. You're going to see a lot of ideas and say, this is the best thing since sliced bread. My personal view, we're going to have a world where things get reshuffled and reshaped with all these different pieces of guidance. But in the end, the employer system is a common theme that everybody seems to agree with. So I don't think employers are going to disappear from this world, but I think it might expand and have other paths. But change can be hard, and it's important to figure out what your priorities are. Some way for service providers, what is your business model? I know we already have clients we're talking to about that, about where they fit in as this model changes. And heck, even us as lawyers have the exact same discussions. Kevin, any closing thoughts?
David, I think you hit the head on all of them. I think if you're a plan sponsor and you're looking at this, you can see the changes on the horizon. But one of the things that's somewhat comforting is that the president has said that the goal is to increase kind of access to employer-sponsored plans. So I think there's some hope that when rules come out, when changes come to the retirement system, their employer-friendly changes.
Well, guys, obviously a lot going on there. Great analysis, as always. Thanks for chatting with us and keeping us and the audience abreast of the major issues. Sounds like we're going to be busy over the next 90 to 120 days as we kind of come to the end of the year, go through the midterms. And I guess we're going to have to check in on this each week. So thank you. Wish you all a great weekend. And I guess we'll check back in next week.
Thank you so much.
Thanks, guys. Bye-bye. Well, that wraps another great week of the Weekly Pulse Sunday podcast. I'm Jeff Snyder, thanking all of our guests and contributors to the show. Welcome to Devin Banerjee and LinkedIn. And thank you to all of our contributors. They make a great effort every week to deliver thoughtful information to you, the audience. Deliver us feedback. You can certainly reach all of us through my LinkedIn account or through the email jeffrey.snyder@themorningpulse.com. Thank you and have a great Labor Day weekend.